Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Carl Ove Knausgård is a writer who has never shied away from big questions, from the radical honesty of his multi-volume series, My Struggle, to his recent novels and essays. His work asks what it means to be alive, to love, to create, to age, and to live with a constant awareness of death. His new novel, The School of Night, takes those questions in a bold and unexpected direction. At its center is an artist, a photographer, navigating the familiar pressures of family life and artistic ambition. But beneath the surface of the everyday, something else is stirring. As unsettling events begin to intrude on his carefully ordered world, the novel opens into a meditation on darkness, both personal and cosmic. Again, the name of the new novel is The School of Night, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Carl Ove Knausgård to our book show this week. Thank you very much for being with us. What an honor to have you on the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
When you look at a book like this, when you compare anything, I guess, to My Struggle and what you did with that series, everything then comes somewhat autobiographical, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think I've written like six novels now since My Struggle. And I think those kind of autobiographical questions starts to diminish and to stop now. It's less now. But the thing is, I do use myself in all my writing, but not a biographical self, but more like, you know, emotions and situation I've been in. But I'm entering them and my emotions through other people, you know, through invented people, invented characters, and that changed everything. But for my writing to be true, I must somehow relate to the emotions and then everything must ground in my experience of the world somehow, even when I'm writing about, you know, a young girl or whatever.
So London, 1985, so also rooted very much in place then as well, which I assume comes from, again, your experiences.
Yeah. I set the novel in London and I set them in 1985, and I wasn't in London in 1985. I want to write about London, but by doing that, setting it in the past, it becomes like, you know, like fiction. I have to invent it on the page, and that is fun in itself, I think. And then in 1985, I was living in Norway. I was a teenager, lived on an island, kind of outside of everything, and I listened to music, and it was British music, also some American music, but all those bands, post-punk bands. But I never went, you know. But I was familiar with that world without being there. And to me, that was the world opening up through the music. Then you knew there is something more. There is something outside of this particular world I'm growing up in. It's like a rope coming down from the sky. You know, you can climb up and you can see the world. And so I loved that sense of allowing myself to go back in fiction to that time and actually go to London in 1985 and write about that music, really.
The music is certainly written about a lot. It seems, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that a lot of American music is put aside by this character, and thought to be in general crap. And then you look at what is coming out of London and even in your home country.
Yeah, that's true. And in real life, there was a turn when I was around 16, 17 in my music world from UK to the US. So I remember the first REM record, Chronic Town, came out. I bought it. I thought it was wonderful. It was green and red. It was Wall of Voodoo, Stan Ridgeway. And that kind of opened up whole of the US as the music scene there, the contemporary music scene. But of course, then you start to dig and then you ended up in country and, or, you know, Americana or whatever, where I'm still is. But that happened at that time. It was a kind of a marked change in the orientation from UK to the US. But that's not in the book because he's not me, you know, he stays in his lane and and likes what he likes. And he has a dislike of America also later in the book. I'm sorry, but but he does.
And we sort of skip in the book, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but as to the moments that perhaps brought that opinion to bear as to he tells us what he doesn't like about the U.S., but those experiences have already happened when we hear about them, but it doesn't seem like it's far off, because there's just so much going on in it, and also just in general of what is happening in his world at that moment, not a whole lot to like.
No, it's true. He's a very unlikable character. He's very unsympathetic. He doesn't care about other people, really. He's has no empathy. And that's the clue to him and to this book and to me writing the book. Because when I discovered that, you know, I had a young photographer, 19, coming to London in 1985, and that was basically what I had. And then I realized that he has this lack of no emotions for other people, lack of love for other people. He's a narcissistic person. And that changed the novel and made kind of, because, you know, the Greeks said that fate is character. And this particular character trait leads him into some episodes where he takes some decisions that I wouldn't have taken, but it leads him into a certain path. And that path is the path of success for him. It's like the world opens up just because of that. Because if you don't feel empathy, then you're basically free. So if you're an artist, if you don't care about other people or other people's feelings, you can do whatever you want. And that freedom is what he kind of explores and take advantage of.
What I found interesting, I mean, that could be any artist, right? I mean, it's not a photographer versus a painter or a musician.
Yeah.
It's an artist's personality.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the interesting thing is that, you know, it's an old question I also asked myself when I was younger and more, you know, more like an anarchist. And was it possible to be a good person and a good artist? I'm not interested in that question anymore, but it is part of this book, because as an artist, you have to transgress, you know, you have to go into places where you're not supposed to be. You're not, because everything, for me, art and literature is finding new ways, new paths into the world, you know, get new access into the world outside of the social realm, outside of what we accept and what we think is right. And then there is a conflict between art and society, and that's kind of constant, I think. So that's what I'm kind of, a little bit at least, going into in this book. I try to be a good person and to be as good as I can. I really do. And does that mean that I'm a bad artist? Yeah, maybe, probably. But there is this temptation, you know, to cross those lines and to do the unheard of, the things that you're not supposed to do. And, you know, there is so much power in it. And I felt that a little bit when I started my struggle, because I wasn't supposed to do it. There was a lot of anger surrounding me. And also, you know, it wasn't good. I knew it wasn't good, but still I did it. And I did it because the power in it was so immense. And it was a novel. I could have cut off my left arm to write a novel at that time. And it just came in that form. And it was very powerful for me. And the power laid very much in, you're not supposed to do this, you know.
And some of what you weren't supposed to do is I guess, be as harsh, perhaps, as you were to your family.
It was my father. So I'm writing basically about my relationship to my father and to my grandmother. But the thing is, of course, that he isn't just my father. He's very much more. He's a brother and he's a son and all of that. And I think one of the worst things that can happen to a family outside of, you know, death and accidents are if you get a writer in your midst, you know, because and then the fact with my family is that they were very private family. There's hardly any other people in the house. So the doing that in that family was bad. Shouldn't do it, you know, and I did it. And I got rewarded. There was a lot of reward for that book, you know. So I feel guilty about it. And And I wanted to explore that conflict through fiction later now that I have been thinking a bit about it and just go in and look at those mechanisms. But my character here, Christian Hadland, he doesn't feel, guilt, or he doesn't regret anything. But he is taken down in the end anyway by the past.
Right. Do you feel, you say you were rewarded by that. Do you still feel personally rewarded by telling that story, or are there any regrets that linger?
That's a hard question, really, because every time I talk about this, the sacrifice I had to make to make this book and so on and so forth, this is kind of nullified by the fact that it was a success, and I do gain from it, and the other people around, they haven't got anything. They're just like they've been robbed. But for me personally, as a writer, it was. I don't, regret doing it. For to me, it's like a document of a certain period in my life when I was 40. How the world looked like exactly when I was 40. How the past looked, and how everything looked. And I wrote it incredibly quickly. I wrote 5 novels in a year, and that's. It's a slice of time to me. And then there also was a kind of, this was an experiment, really, between literature and life. So when I was publishing the books, the previous one were reviewed, and I got reactions from media and from people I know, and it's all in the book. So it's like a kind of exchange between life and literature constantly through that. And I find that, yeah, that was interesting. I'm very happy I did it. But the cost... Yeah, well, at the time, it felt incredibly risky because I didn't know the state of mind to the people around. I didn't write negatively about them, but I wrote, about my father and my mother who was dead. But still, if they were unstable, maybe someone could have, killed himself or whatever. And that didn't happen. So it was hurt feelings, I think. That was basically what it was.
And it's still the truth. I mean, to you, it was the story that you lived. It was your struggle.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's, if I've started writing my struggle now, it would have looked different. I mean, my father would have looked different. I'm older now. I'm even older than he was when he died. So I can see him in a different light. And that was also the part of the point with that book series, is that people, the outlook of the world is different when you're 16 or when you're 20, when you're 30, when you're 40. So my father changed throughout the book, and he has continued to change, really, which is interesting, I think. But it still is true. That was how the world looked like at that time for me.
The name of the new book is The School of Night, a novel. It is published by Penguin Press. Carl Ludvig Knausgård is our guest on this week's book show. You mentioned at the very beginning that you had this young photographer and you had London in the 1980s. There is also the Faust and Christopher Marlowe connection. I'm curious, did you have that from the beginning of an idea?
Part of the reason for setting the book in London was that it was Marlowe's city. And, I read about Marlowe in the 90s, I think. I don't know if I wasn't familiar with that story at all, but he was very young, very brilliant, very violent. He was born the same year as Shakespeare, but he was before Shakespeare, and he kind of made a revolution in theater. He invented the blank verse, and he was Shakespeare before Shakespeare. And then he was killed incredibly brutally in Deptford. And he was a blasphemic person, and he was, there was something violent to him, really. I read about this, and I remember the name Deptford, and I remember the name The School of Night. There was a kind of some people he was associated with, they were called The School of Night. There were astronomers and alchemists and him, and a very subversive gang in that time, if anything of this had come out, they've been executed, of course. And he died very violently in Deptford. So I moved to London, and then I saw Deptford. Deptford really exists. I can go there. That was where it happened. And I decided I have to use that in a novel. Have to be in that kind of physical presence to what happened then. And then, of course, the School of Night it's an intriguing title to me. It's, what is the School of Night? What are you learning there? You know, is it dark stuff, or is it evil stuff, or is it maybe, you know, it could be the subconscious, all the things you're not aware of. It could be all kind of stuff. So I love the title, and I wanted to have Marlowe in there somehow. And I think that Faust story he wrote, Dr. Faustus, he was the first who did that. And that story is of course a myth, but I think it's like all myths, you can apply it now, you know, and it still will make sense. And it's, you know, it's a bargain with the devil. I think that's going on around us. I like that. I like having like a myth, something that's just in the culture, and make it concrete, you know, and you know, like pull it down to the ground and into the kitchen and see how it unfolds there. That's what I'm trying to do.
You mentioned earlier, and it's something that I found fascinating, that when you have a character like Christian, who is young and ambitious and is out in the world, and for the first, you talk about the school part, for more than half the novel is being schooled, is being educated in photography, and has people that he is somewhat answering to as to having his work judged. But that idea that you mentioned earlier of no empathy, that really frees you up, but frees him up too, doesn't it? It gives you a great latitude to not have that empathy.
Yeah, it gives him freedom, really. Yeah, it gives him space, but it's a very lonely space. But he, you know, since he doesn't care about other people, that's fine. And it makes him some sort of, you know, he can, of course, be hurt, but he will always find a way, I think, and he does. But the mystery here is, of course, when you're a young, aspiring writer or artist, when you're 19, 99 out of 100 would not be good. I mean, you might see some talent, but you won't be good, you know? That's kind of a fact. And then all of a sudden something happens with someone,
right?
And they're on another level, and that's the real thing, and they are artists, you know? But the transition phase there is to me like a mystery. And I mean, I have friends who I read what they wrote, and they read what I wrote, and was all kind of bad and not really, just full of pretensions, all of that, you know. And then my friend, like in 2 months, just kind of transformed completely and wrote something that I still think is incredibly good. And he was like 23 or something. And how could that happen? What happened really? What is it that takes place? And it's not like in the personality, or it's not about being clever, or it's something else that happens. And in my book, that is, you know, somehow connected with the bargain. You know, it's surrounded by some sort of mystery, but something happens, and all of a sudden he does good stuff. He doesn't know why, but it's just kind of a transformation.
And when it comes to the relationship that Christian has with his parents, that is a very 19-year-old relationship too, isn't it? Basically, when he leaves and says, "I'm enough with my parents," there isn't really anything other than his parents find him to be very self-involved and narcissistic.
Yeah, that's true. You know, as all narcissists, he is incredibly easy to hurt. What I wanted to do with the parents was that I wanted him to have a completely normal upbringing, kind parents, good childhood, nothing wrong really. I didn't want to make like a psychological explanation of his character at all. I wanted him to just be like that, no development. You know, Ingmar Bergman, the Swedish, mm-hmm. he grew up with, he portrayed him as a despotic father, and he wrote a lot about and made films about his upbringing and his family, and written a lot about it. But if you see them from the outside, they're kind of normal, good people, I think. And someone said about Bergman, he would have been Bergman no matter where he grew up. You know, it's in him. It's not in the surroundings. It's him. And that's very interesting, I think. It's also opposite of the way I normally think. I always seek explanation in relations, in childhood and stuff. But it doesn't have to be 100% that. So I have this kind of character that doesn't change. And he's just like he is. And he leaves the parents behind, doesn't care about the parents, you know. And to do that, make him like that, I remember how I was myself when I was 19, you know, very immature, didn't see what the good people did for me, didn't see what my mother did. I know I asked for money all the time. She was really, you know, poor and struggled. I didn't care. I just wanted the money and so on. Those kind of things you could do when you're 19. I just poured that into him and made it a bit more maybe. But then there is, he doesn't change except the end. Because in the end, there is some sort of love turning up in his life. He's not even aware of it himself, but he feels love for someone. And that's his weak point. And that's where he is taken down through that love thing. He doesn't care about anyone. There's no empathy. And then he suddenly gets it. And then that's where he's hit.
It's even when there's discord in the family, obviously, and his parents are worried about him, but he's not going to give them the satisfaction of communicating with them. All of a sudden, as they're wont to do, they send him a large sum of money to help him get by, as they have in the past. And the question is, do you cash the check now that you've said, I don't want you to be around anymore? And here again, this comes back to Faust and to the bargain, doesn't it?
It's a bargain on several levels, and one is very concrete and down there, you know, and that's one. Oh, but it's a kind of realistic moral issue, isn't it? You're broken with your parents, you need money, they give you money, should you take it or not?
And his friends sort of are around a table, and they're all deciding, well, what they would do, and that's fascinating, really.
Yeah, no, it is.
The idea to go to the point of the great success, and then obviously having some of the things that had taken part in his life coming back, the love really doesn't enter into it until very late in the novel, of where we understand that there is an Achilles heel there.
Yeah, exactly. What I thought when I wrote it is, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen to a human being? That's going to happen to him. And that was the hardest part, I think, amongst the hardest parts I've written, you know, ever, was that part. Because it is, I never know what's going to happen when I'm writing. So whatever takes place on the page on that day, it has this quality of actually happening, actually existing, you know. So when you do something terrible on page, it's like it's really happening. And that's so difficult to relate to, because then I open the door, you know, and there's my family and my kids and innocent and yeah, never. and why do I do it? Why do I go to those dark places? And there is a lot of dark places in the Morningstar series. Why do I do it? I don't feel that my life is, you know, filled with darkness. Exactly, it's basically the opposite. But I think when you sit and write, you are in a room, you're on your own. What you do, you leave yourself. That's what writing is, really. And what do you enter when you leave yourself? You enter the what's there here and now, you know. And when I wrote my struggle, it was like, it was struggles and it was, you know, difficulties and it was conflicts, but it was all set in a kind of unchangeable world. There was nothing in the world that changed, you know, but then in the Morningstar, it's different. It's like everything kind of is moving around and the boundaries are set in a specific place. They're kind of, things are opening up, things are changing, moving around. It's an unsettling world all of a sudden. I never thought about that, but it just happened in the writing. And of course, that is because so much have happened in the world the last 10 years. And this series started just before the pandemic. So I wrote the first novel into the pandemic, you know, and in that novel, it is a star on the sky. Everybody can see it, but everybody sees it from their, you know, position. And that was how what happened. Something threatening came. I remember sitting in London in the apartment with my family, hearing the ambulances, not knowing really what was going on, just reading about all the deaths. That was, you know, that feeling, that was the first kind of really unsettling of the world. That was where it started in my world, at least. And then the second book, I set it in Russia, you know, and it ends in some sort of violence in Russia. And then like 2 months later, Russia invaded Ukraine. That was the second thing. We didn't think that could happen, a war in Europe, you know. And so it's, I think when you write, you're just connected with the world somehow, not in specific details, but just in the feeling of things. And now the feeling is that the world is very unstable and not fixed at all. And, you know, everything can happen, really. And it's a very interesting place to write into, but also, you know, in it is also kind of scary or unsettling, or yeah.
So when you look at this particular novel, The School of Night, how does it fit into the Morning Star series?
There is a character in the first Morning Star book. Not many people have noticed this because it's really a minor character, but he's called Christian Hadeland. So that's him. So he ends up in this novel in a particular space, and then he will turn up again into the universe of Morningstar in the last book. It will be drawn, but the whole subject is, of course, in this book. I think it's what is evil. I wanted to take kind of the smallest grain of evil I could think of, which would be not being empathetic, and just write about that, because that's what I can relate to. I mean, I take it for myself, and I think also readers can relate to it. And I think lack of empathy is what it takes to be ruthless, and is what it takes to do harm to other people, because you don't care about other people. Yeah.
The name of the new book is The School of Night. It is published by Penguin Press. Carlo Vekanauskard, I thank you so much for being with us. What a pleasure. I've been a great fan of your work for a long time, and it's a real honor to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Carl Ove Knausgaard's new novel is The School of Night. It is published by Penguin Press. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org. and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.